Okay, so last week we discussed the basis for the requirement to immerse utensils and dishes that are acquired from a non-Jew. And we talked about how, on one hand, used utensils and dishes require kashering from the according to the Torah. But both new and used utensils require tefillah. They require purification beyond the kashering that merely cleans the vessels. And we discussed whether it's d'oraisa d'rabbanan. We seem to conclude that the requirement is d'oraisa. So next thing to discuss is, what does it mean to own a kelim, and what does it mean to acquire, and everything in between? How does that affect the requirement to tovel dishes and utensils? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, source 12 on page 152, says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Loshana Ela Belkuchin. So the requirement to do tefillah only applies when you actually buy, when you have full ownership of that utensil. Masa Shehaya, just like in Midian, when Bnei Israel took the dishes from Midian, so they were taking them. I mean, they didn't buy them, but they took full ownership of them. They weren't borrowing it. So then the Gemara says, "Aval she'ulin lo," but utensils that are borrowed do not require immersion. And the Rashba, one of the Rishonim, writes in Torah Sabayis that this is not just in terms of borrowing, but even renting. He says, "Shal kelim chadash bin agoy." If I borrow unused utensils from a non-Jew, or shescharin b'medu, even if I rent them, mishdamish b'hen miyad, I can use them immediately. V'en antzrichin tefila, they don't require tefila because it's only ownership of the utensils by a non-Jew that requires, taking ownership from a non-Jew that requires a tefillah. But when I merely borrow or rent utensils, so that's not considered to be a full acquisition. That's not full ownership. I don't have to tovel it. So that has, of course, very important implications, right? That if I stay in an Airbnb and I want to use their glasses, right? And those glasses presumably don't pose any kashrus issues. Probably only been used for cold drinks and even most likely kosher drinks. So it doesn't matter if they're tovled or not because I'm only using them on a temporary basis. I'm borrowing them. Maybe I rented the place and maybe I rented along with that their utensils, but I'm not buying them in that sense. Of course, it goes without saying that pots and pans and the like, if you're borrowing from a non-Jew, so then you would have to worry about the kashrus of those dishes also. But I could easily do a hagala or even libun in those cases without having to bring those utensils to the mikvah. Right? So that does matter. So Shulchan Aruch paskins this way. He says, "Asho socher kli mehagoy." If I borrow or rent utensil from a non-Jew, ain otan tefila, doesn't require tefila. But let's say a Jew buys a utensil from a non-Jew, and he lent that utensil to a friend before he had toveled it. So ta'un tefillah. So then that third person has to do the tefillah. At that point, once a Jew bought it, so even if let's say Reuven buys a pot from Chris, and then Reuven did not tovel yet, and he gives that he loans that pot to Shimon. So even though Shimon's only borrowing it, he still has to tovel it because once Reuven acquires it, it's a Jewish pot and needs to be toveled. So one question that becomes trickier in terms of acquiring something from a non-Jew. So once upon a time, ownership was very simple. One person, you're dealing with individual people. It's very clear who owns a what. And that's true in a lot of areas when it comes to, you know, if my ox score is your ox, so in the time of the Gemara, you know, one person owns that ox and he's responsible. But things change. So, for example, the Aruch HaShulchan says when it comes to factories, right, post-industrial revolution, so it's not necessarily that what's the status when you have things that are being mass-produced and multiple people are involved. So he shares an opinion that that if the workers are not Jewish, but the owner's Jewish, or the owner's not Jewish, but the workers are Jewish, so either way, because there's Jewish involvement, you don't have to tovel them. And he says that specifically by glass, because the prohibition, the requirement to tovel glass is derabanan. So if there's Jewish involvement one way or another, then you don't have to tovel it. So Aruch HaShulchan says in verse 15, v'loni hiradi klal. I don't agree with this at all. This doesn't make sense to me. If in the case of mass production, when I have a factory and you're making hundreds or thousands of utensils, it says, I call holech achar bal ha'esek. It matters who the owner is. And the ownership goes according to the owner of the factory. So if the owner is Jewish, but the factory workers are not Jewish, so you don't have to tovel, even though there were non-Jews who were technically making the utensils, but you essentially acquired them from a Jew. And likewise, if I have a factory that's owned by a non-Jew, but let's say all the workers were Jewish, let's say, so even then, I still have to tovel that, those glasses, because the owner in that case is non-Jewish, even though Jews were technically making them. So when you buy utensils, in terms of determining if you want to know what the requirement for tefillah is, you have to know who the owner is, if they're Jewish or non-Jewish. And he says this is true with metal also, right? If the factory owner is Jewish, then metal does not have to be toveled. So in the Sefer Tefillah's Kalim, so they write that, let's say a factory is jointly owned by a Jew and a non-Jew. So in that case, you have to immerse that utensil with a bracha because there's some non-Jewish ownership involved. Although some people say not to say a bracha. So that might be the right way to go since it's a suffix brachos. We should not make a bracha. And he says the same is true if the factory is owned by a corporation or stockholder, some of whom are Jewish and some of whom are Gentile. In that case, tefillah would be required. The fascinating thing about corporations is that, again, ownership is very different nowadays in that sense. Again, an example I used before, my ox scored your ox, then that's one particular person who's responsible for that. But what happens if I buy a car that's defective? So according to the law, really, according to the way corporations work legally, you're not suing an individual, you're suing a company. A company is its own independent entity. So a lot of questions come up in that regard about whether, you know, a company sort of that independent status matters halakhically. So that can come up in questions of interest, questions of selling chametz. If a company has to sell their chametz on Pesach, to stockholders, et cetera, et cetera. So legally speaking, corporations are technically their own entity. So one could potentially argue that when I go to Bed Bath & Beyond, Aleph HaShalom, or soon to be Aleph HaShalom, and I buy a pot, so maybe that doesn't require tefillah because I bought it from a company, and the company, it might be non-Jews involved in it, but But the company is non-Jewish or non-Jewish. It's its own totally separate entity. Nonetheless, the halacha does not seem to be, the common practice does not seem to be that way. And when you buy metal or glass utensils, even from a jointly owned company, you have to tovel them. Unless, one way or another, it's determined that that the utensils come from a company that's entirely Jewishly owned. So, if the status is not known, Rav Avadya Yosef raises this question. So then he says you don't have to. Then you don't have to immerse it. But that's in a case specifically when most of the utensil producing factories, you know, in that vicinity are owned by Jews. So that might be more relevant in Israel, where it could be that, 9 out of 10 factories are owned by Jews. I don't know if that's true, but let's say if 9 out of 10 factories are owned by a Jew. But I don't know if this particular factory is, so then we would say that doesn't require tefillah. So one important implication of all this, of course, is when it comes to Judaica. So Judaica most likely is produced by a Jew. So therefore, Kiddush cups, for example, whether they're made of metal or glass, do not require a tefillah. But one should not make the mistake of assuming that just because I buy a particular product in Israel that it's automatically produced by a Jew. So I had this question once. I bought a water bottle in the shuk. I brought it back to yeshiva, and I said to one of my rebbeim, do I have to tovel this? I thought there was enough of a possibility that it would be required, but I figured, well, I bought it in Israel. He said, no, these things are made in China. So that is often the case. You know, it could be, you know, regular utensils that you buy in Israel might be imported, in which case you do have to tovel them. So one has to be careful about that. Now, Shulchan Aruch says that if a Jew buys a utensil and then he sells it, and then he buys it back, so then it requires tefillah. He says, Yisrael shemachar kli lagoy, I sell a dish to a non-Jew, v'chazar kacha mimenu, and then I buy it back, so then it requires tefillah. So that's very important when it comes to selling things on Pesach. So the Pesach Yitshuva on source 19 says that that if I sell my dishes on Pesach, and maybe I think it's a good idea because maybe there's some chametz in dishes and I don't have to worry about it. But he says that that if you sell your dishes to non-Jews, so then you would have to go back and tovel everything. So therefore, you should not sell your utensils. So we would assume that most utensils are clean, that any chametz that potentially is there is a batel b'shishim before Pesach, which is fine, but I really did have someone this past year who wrote on his shtar for selling chametz that he was going to sell his dishes. And I crossed it off. I said, if you do that, you're going to have to go back and tovel everything. So practice is not to sell dishes. Ramah writes that if a Jew and a non-Jew acquire a utensil jointly, we're not talking about the production, but in the acquisition, they belong to both, so then it doesn't require tefillah. But the Shach comes and says that if you if the Jew buys a non-Jewish guy's part of the utensil, his share in the utensil, then you have to do, then you would have to do tefillah. Okay, so we're going to leave off discussing which materials require immersion, and this is obviously a lot to say about this. So Gemara in Avodah Zarah, source 22, page 156, says Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Zvan Mana de Marga. So Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef bought a utensil made of marda, which Rashi says a mixture of earth and dung. So it's an earthenware utensil, and he bought this from a goy. So he thought maybe I should tovel it. So Amar Lehahu Mirabban of Rabbi Yaakov Shmei. One of the rabbis said, and Rabbi Yaakov is his name. Ladidi Mifarshale Neid Rabbi Yochanan. I heard from Rabbi Yochanan. Klei Matachas Amun Barparsha. So again, in the Torah. So the only dishes that were mentioned, anything about kashering or toveling, were only things made out of metal. gold, silver, copper, iron. Those would require tefillah, but there's no mention of earthenware requiring a tefillah in the Torah. So therefore, the implication is you don't have to do it. And we'll discuss a little bit later why that's an extremely important point regarding earthenware. So then Rav Ashi comes and says, "Hani kleis chuchis." When it comes to glass, ho'ol v'chi nishtabru yesh lahen takana. When I, you know, even if they break, so they can be fixed because you can melt them and can put them, you know, you can work them back together. People who are glass blowers can do that. So therefore, kikleim matachos namu, they're considered to be like metal dishes. And then there's a discussion of kunya, which is lead-coated earthenware utensils. So there, on one hand, the actual substance is earthenware, but the lead coating is metal. So that's the disagreement between Rav Acha and Ravina. One of them holds ketchila, so you go according to its original state, meaning that it was earthenware, does not require immersion. The chadamar kisofa. The other says that you go according to its final state, which includes a coating of metal, so therefore it would require tefillah. The hilchasa kisofa, and therefore the halacha is, the Gemara just says that the halacha follows the opinion that we go according to the final state. So based on that, if I if I have something that's made of ceramic but there's some sort of metal coating, I would have to do tefillah. So Tosfos suggests that it's only true if the lead, if that covering is on the inside, if it's bifnim. But if it's coated on the outside, so then it doesn't require tefillah, because that part's not coming in contact with the food. And the assumption is that the metal component is not essential to the function, right? Maybe adds something aesthetically or for whatever reason, but fundamentally it's an earthenware utensil, except that if the coating is inside, so then it's actually coming in contact with the food, so it requires tefillah. So in source 24, the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Hakonim agoy klei suda shel matachos o shel zchuchis." If I buy metal or glass dishes from a non-Jew, "Okelim hametzubim ba'avar mibifnim." Or if I buy earthenware utensils that have a lead coating on the inside, so even if they're new, you have to tovel them properly. So Shulchan Aruch holds like Tosos in this regard, that it's only if the metal coating is inside that you have to tovel them. So the Rama comes and says, "Yish amrim dekelim hametzubim ba'avar," that utensils that are coated with lead, "afilu bifnim yitol below bracha," so even from the inside they are to be immersed, but without a bracha. "V'chei noagin." So the implication is that that if it's coated on the outside with metal, that also requires tefillah, but without a bracha. So we have this chart here on the bottom of page 157. It summarizes, so if the utensil is covered with metal on the outside only, Shulchan Aruch says no tefillah required. Rama says you need to do tefillah without a bracha. If it's lined on the inside with metal, so Shulchan Aruch would say that you have to tovel it with a bracha, but the Rama here says that the tefillah does not require a bracha. So Rama's consistent in not requiring a bracha with this metal coating. Shulchan Aruch says that if it's on the inside, you have to make a bracha. If it's on the outside, you don't have to even tovel it at all. So Ravadi Yosef writes in Halichot Olam, source 26, that if earthenware utensils are covered both inside and outside with lead or glass, they must be immersed with a blessing. So that's when they're both inside and outside. If they are immersed only on the inside, they are to be immersed without a bracha. That seems to be like the Shulchan Aruch. If it's just on the outside, it doesn't sound like Rav Avadia would require tefillah. If it's on the inside, it's only without a bracha, which actually contradicts the Shulchan Aruch, which is unusual for Rav Avadia. But his concern is because they're again, Safik Bracha Lahakel, when there's some sort of uncertainty, because some poskim hold that it doesn't require bracha, so we don't make a bracha. So this has implications for Teflon, frying pans, and the like, in the reverse, that the Teflon itself is metal, the pan is metal, but the coating is not, the coating itself doesn't have the components that require tefillah. So, so there, in theory, we might say that since the Teflon coating would not itself require a bracha, so maybe you shouldn't have to tovel it at all. But most poskim would suggest that you should tovel without a bracha, because the Teflon itself includes glass components, but also the you know, we talked about the idea that if the coating was sort of non-essential, that's one thing. In this case, you know, the metal pan is still very essential to this pan. The metal material is still very relevant. So for all these considerations, Teflon pans should be toveled, but without a bracha. So utensils that do not require tefillah, so Rambam writes, verse 27 on page 158, that clay eights, clay avanim, wooden or stone utensils, so you don't have to tovel them. So if they're new, don't have to do anything at all. Of course, so, you know, washing them is generally advised anyway from a sanitary perspective. And if I were to, let's say, I were to acquire used wooden or stone utensils, so I would just wash it very well, but I don't have to tovel. Okay, so the Pesachei Tshuva brings up the question of porcelain. So porcelain is in some ways similar to glass, but in some ways it's not. In some ways, porcelain is similar to earthenware. And, you know, the Torah mentioned that that metal requires tefillah, not this porcelain material. So glass is a takana derabanan. Glass is also smoother. Glass is also able to be repaired more easily. Porcelain does not seem to have those properties. So therefore, even though porcelain has some similarities to glass, it does not need to be toveled. There are some people who would tovel porcelain without a bracha. So Sefer Kashrus gives us a little bit of a summary in source 29. So metal, of course, requires immersion from the Torah. Gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, lead, steel. So aluminum and enamel utensils are immersed without a bracha. So question of, let's say, the aluminum pans that you buy in Amazing Savings or one of the kosher stores, so do those require tefillah if you use them more than just for one-time use? So it seems that two or three times that you use them, maybe not. If you're going to use them permanently, they're going to become like real utensils that you use if they somehow last that way, then it might be suggested to tovel those without a bracha. Glass is immersed with a bracha. We still make brachos even though glass is only required midrabanan. But we make brachos on midrabanan. So glass has to be toveled with a bracha. This includes Duralex, Pyrex, and Corel. And then they say, although some say that porcelain and glazed pottery do not require immersion, a number of posts can require immersion. So therefore, many have the practice to immerse them without a blessing. And so there's a question with a lot of porcelain, ceramic, china. There might be a very thin glazing, and that could even be glass. So it's a little bit, they note in the footnote that that's a little bit different than what we had before, because the glass is so thin and insignificant. So some would say they should tovel that without a bracha, but definitely not with a bracha. And things that are absolutely earthenware, pottery, ceramic, stone, wood, paper, those, you know, those that are purely those substances do not require tefillah at all. A big question comes up with the issue of plastic. So Tzitz Eliezer paskened that only metal and glass are mentioned in the Torah and Chazal, and plastic is not really similar to either of those, so therefore does not require tefillah. The Minchas Yitzchak, Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, so he suggests that it is possible, like with glass, that you could melt the plastic and sort of refashion it, and therefore it's similar enough to glass that it should be, that it should have the same status and that tefillah should be required. But he suggests that maybe we do without a bracha because there is this sort of ambiguity. Same thing with porcelain also, right? Even if you want to say that there's some similarities to glass, because that's not necessarily certain. If it's going to be tovo, definitely without a bracha. So Minchas Yitzchak recommends toveling plastic without a bracha. Rav Avadya Yosef takes a position that that, you know, Chazal, what's in the Torah and what's in Chazal is what's there, and plastic did not exist at all then, so could not have been included in that original takana. So therefore, plastic does not need to be toveled at all. So that's a, you know, that's a question sometimes, you know, when something didn't exist before. So do we apply pre-existing categories or not? So that really depends on the situation. That's where you require a qualified posik to be able to determine that. But in this case, the argument is that, you know, especially if you're going to make a comparison between plastic and glass, so glass itself is only derabanan. Plastic is certainly not is not included in that, and therefore should not require tefillah at all. So Rav Avadya also notes that some might be strict and total them, and that's fine in that case. So what happens if you have a utensil that is both, let's say, metal and wood, or two different substances? So how do we know if it requires tefillah or not? So he says, Dafka shi ikar kli hu shel matachos. If I'm ikar kli hu shel eitz, rak shi me'ad barzel kavua bo. So let's say I have a wooden utensil, but there's a little metal that's included in it, but it's mostly wood. If I can use that wooden utensil without the iron at all, then I don't have to tofu it. But he does note that, let's say, if you have a utensil that, let's say, you need the nails in order to be able to hold the utensil together, so then it requires tefillah, even if the metal is only minority, since it's essential to holding the utensil together, it would require tefillah. But if the metal is sort of an insignificant part of it, then we go by the majority, and since it's a wood vessel, would not require tefillah. So Sefer Kashrus writes, if a utensil is composed of two materials, which one requires immersion and one does not, nonetheless, it should be immersed. If the component requiring immersion is the primary part of the utensil, it could not be used otherwise, and is also the piece that touches the food, the whole utensil must be immersed with a bracha. So especially, again, if that metal touches the food, or if it's a primary component, then it definitely requires tefillah even with a bracha. So in a situation where we don't really know what the status of a particular item is, whether it requires, halakhically requires tefillah or not, not an ambiguity in, like, you know, what the actual utensil is, but you know, where there's some sort of halakhic dispute, does this require tefillah or not? So Sefer Kashrus recommends that you should do it without a bracha. You know, on the one hand, since there's an uncertainty, we won't make a bracha, but maybe it's a good idea. Maybe it's a good idea just to tofel it anyway. However, he writes at the end here, vessels that do not require immersion at all, with great certainty, you should not tovel them at all. Why? Because there's a concern that maybe people don't necessarily know, you know, what requires a bracha, what doesn't require a bracha. So if you dunk something that doesn't require a bracha, and it's certain that you don't require a bracha, so that's a potentially bracha levatala. Sometimes chumras are not entirely appropriate if they might lead to other issues. So in this case, you know, something that is purely china, earthenware, wood, stone, etc. So I should not be machmir and tovel it. I shouldn't just be like, well, you know, it doesn't hurt. No, we don't tovel it. But if there's a sort of dispute about whether or not it should be toveled, so it doesn't hurt to tovel it, but we do so without a bracha. Okay, and then we will continue with further indications of how we tovel things and what kind of materials, what kind of, you know, once we've determined that metal requires, and glass requires tefillah, so how far do we take that? Okay.